there's so much miscommunication between couples all the time. And if you think about a fast food drive-through, they really want to ensure that they're getting your order right. And so the employee will repeat back to you what you ordered and even show it on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so I really want partners to do that same clarification so that they're aren't these misunderstandings. And it's just really simple. It's saying, you know, what I'm hearing you say is, you're kind of repeating back. And so not only does this ensure that you got the communication correct, but it also immediately validates your partner. Your partner's like, oh, okay, they heard me. They got it. And it also makes us less defensive because we hear something, we kind of want to fight back immediately. But if we have to pause and then repeat back, it slows everything down. So I think it's just a win-win for everybody.
Hi, my name is Luella Yonk. I'm a psychotherapist and coach. And if you're interested in how your lifestyle is affecting your mental health, then you're at the right place. On this show, I interview various guests from across the miles and share how their lifestyle choices affect their sense of self, their wealth, and most importantly, their health. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I Think I Can. Today, I have a special guest with me. Her name is Kelly Miller, and I'm going to let Kelly introduce herself, and that way we get everything right. So, Kelly.
Okay.
Welcome.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. So I will read my bio. I am a psychotherapist, a best-selling author, and a radio host. I am the author of the new couples relationship book, Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues. And I am the award-winning author of Thriving with ADHD. I was a relationship host for Balanced by Nature TV, and I'm currently a writer and relationship host for wikihow.com and a columnist for Psychology Today. I was a co-host on LA Talk Radio, an expert radio personality for Sirius XM Radio, the women's relationship expert for theexaminer.com, and an advice columnist to the largest listserv in the country. I've been a freelance writer to over 12 magazines and newspapers. I am currently in private practice to individuals and couples. And my website is Kelly Miller Therapy. That's Kelly with an I. And Facebook is the same, Kelly Miller Therapy. And Instagram, same, Kelly Miller Therapy. Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. Wow. That's quite admirable, everything that you've done. So, I mean, as a psychotherapist myself, okay, so obviously you have a love of writing, but
yes,
but what made you write this book, and like, why this book and why now?
Sure. So I was having a lot of couples that were coming into my office and presenting the same issues over and over again. And I really thought about it and I thought, this is great. You know, couples therapists can help these couples, but what about the couples who are struggling, who can't make it to the office for time reasons or financial reasons? And I thought, we need something to help those couples. And we also need to help those couples with quick and effective solutions so they don't have to do a long, arduous therapy process through a book. They can just get the quick and easy. And I didn't see anything like that on the market.
Okay. Okay. Well, how long have you been practicing?
I've been in private practice about 8 years now.
Okay. So you call yourself, a relationship expert. Now, what's this ADHD thing?
How does that come into play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have two boys, 14 and 11. And both of them have ADHD. So I really had to learn, what does this mean? How do I best communicate with them? How do they best learn? I really did a ton of research about ADHD, and that was one of my books. So my passion is really relationships and couples, but that I felt was important to educate the parents around ADHD and also help kids with self-esteem. I think there's so much misinformation out there, and I think kids can feel as if they have a deficit. And I wanted to present a book that shows them, no, this is, you just have a different way of learning. You're still amazing and passionate, but you just have a different way of learning than the neurotypical person who just learns traditionally.
Exactly. Okay. So did this prompt you at all to get tested yourself?
It's really funny because people have asked me. I mean, I've never been tested. I definitely have some hyperactivity, but yet I'm super organized. So there's where the little piece may be. I'm not sure. So, but you know, it's funny. Either way, it's all good, right? So.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, the reason why I'm asking this is because I've been looking into it a little bit myself, like, because, well, you know, people just see it as hyperactivity. Most people see it as the boy that just can't sit down in the classroom, right? But I think the inattentive ADHD type is often, I think, very misdiagnosed. And I am no expert in this. And actually, I get quite, you know, I get quite upset with when adults come to my office stating that, you know, they just walked into their doctor's office and they requested, you know, this questionnaire to be done. Sure. And within literally minutes, you know, they prescribed one of the stimulants. And so, I mean, I much prefer like what you were describing there, like sort of education, workarounds, but also, I mean, just to me, and maybe you can expand on this as well, psychotherapy is really, if I were to sum it up, it's just understanding yourself. Like a person that's coming for psychotherapy, the psychotherapist is really the guide on the side into you getting very inquisitive about why you behave the way you do. And then, yes, we specialize in certain areas like relationships and stuff like that. But you know, it's just sort of like, what is your workarounds, you know, for this type of mind that you have? Yeah. So
I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah. It's right. It's just that awareness and self-reflection. I mean, I think, you know, people think of therapy as like a, you know, a luxury. I'm like, no, it's a necessity. We should all examine ourselves, and learn, right? I mean, there's so much benefit to it.
So much benefit. Like, I mean, it's not always very lovely, right? While we're doing it. Like, I mean, I don't know if you've attended or you have your own therapist, but I can understand why it's very intimidating for people because of all the exposure that you have to do about yourself and that real connection and trust of the therapist is huge. And it's very, very scary. So let's get back into this work that you've just completed here, this masterpiece, Love Hacks. Why the title?
The title? My literary agent came up with it and I really liked it. Yeah, she's great. I love my agent, Linda Connor, but she came up with it and I thought, you know what, that actually works because it's like, we need these little tools, little solutions, right? To help us out. And it is like a hack, right? Like if we can sort of tune in and kind of, you know, rig the system, I think it helps relationships. So I thought it was really catchy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We hear about lifestyle hacks all the time. I talk about it all the time. You know, whether it's tools in our toolbox, but so what are some of the hacks that you're presenting to couples to help, rectify what's going on in their world?
Yeah, sure. So Love Hacks details the top 15 most common relationship issues and then three solutions to each. So really thought about what are the 15 most talked about, most difficult issues, and then I come up with three solutions. So for example, my partner never listens to me. And so something I deal in the book is something what I call the fast food communication method.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So, yeah, and I'm happy to go into it, but
Sure.
So, I mean, if you think about it, there's so much miscommunication between couples all the time. And if you think about a fast food drive-through, they really want to ensure that they're getting your order right. And so the employee will repeat back to you what you ordered and even show it on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so I really want partners to do that same clarification so that there aren't these misunderstandings. And it's just really simple. It's saying, you know, what I'm hearing you say is, you're kind of repeating back. And so not only does this ensure that you got the communication correct, but it also immediately validates your partner. Your partner's like, oh, okay, they heard me. They got it. And it also makes us less defensive because we hear something, we kind of want to fight back immediately. But if we have to pause and then repeat back, it slows everything down. So I think it's just a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I like what you're saying about, you know, inserting the pause button there, because I think, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. If we ever hear sort of a remark about us that is not so favorable, like I think any human being is going to react and they're going to defend. I think it's just a normal. It's so normal. Like I know I try to teach, stop being so defensive, but I mean, like you must experience it as well. Like it's super hard. It's super hard.
Sure.
So it's just sort of, pausing and, I like it. I like what you're saying because you're getting to like, first of all, curious with your partner. It's like, can we just, like restate that again, just so I'm completely understanding your perspective and where you're coming from.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's
great.
Exactly it.
Okay. So what are some others that you're suggesting?
What are you interested in? I got sex, I got money problems.
You know what? Yeah. Well, see, like I was going to ask you that question. Like what, I hear it all the time. I'm not really sure if I feel the same way exactly, but they say, you know, it's either sex or it's money issues that end most relationships. Do you feel like that's true?
I mean, I think those are big ones, but then it's really funny. It's stuff like chores that I hear all the time. My partner, you know, I do so many more chores than my partner and it's so unfair. So it kind of runs the gamut. Mm-hmm. But you know, since I brought up chores, I mean, I think something that we just don't talk about before we move in together, before we kind of start this union is, you know, talking about chores and what works and what doesn't. And so I'm a big proponent of having a chore chart, right? And really just taking the time beforehand and just kind of coming up and, hey, what are your strengths and what do you hate doing? And then alternating weeks. And then you put that on the refrigerator. And so one person doesn't have to be the nag. I mean, it's right up there. They see it. Mm-hmm. And then you just switch weeks. And so that's something that I recommend, or making it really fun. I think we are so serious all the time. And it's like, no, let's play a game, right? Mm-hmm. Let's set the timer and let's see who can do the chores quicker in 30 minutes. We'll put on music. We'll make it fun. Mm-hmm. I'm all about kind of adding a little bit of that to make it a little more exciting.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I like the idea of, you know, putting it up because personally, I'm a very visual person and because I'm always thinking too, like people change, you know, like I myself have been in a 26 year marriage. Like I think even with our best intention, when we meet someone early in life and it's that honeymoon phase and a very dangerous phase, I'll say.
Yeah, right.
Because everyone looks really great at that point. Yeah.
Yes.
But people do change. And that's the problem because even though you might have this understanding amongst one another and we're both like, let's switch, let's have the chores, then life happens.
Sure.
Maybe they took a job outside of the state, outside the province. But what I like about the visual part is, you know, that person will have to continue seeing that list. And if one of the partners had to go over and above for a certain period of time, let's say while their other partner's grinding it at work, then it's all like, it's that visual reminder. It's like, whoa, was that unbalanced? Yes. And maybe it would give them more an incentive. It's sort of like, I can't wait to get this back into balance
exactly. Well, and it holds everybody accountable and nobody's the police. It's just, it's right there on the refrigerator. It's very clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then even the kids could get involved and maybe more.
I recommend
incentive.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have kids yourself?
I do. I've got two boys, 14 and 11.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. There's, and they need help with chores. So,
exactly. Okay. So, okay. That's the chores. like, how about the finances? I mean, that's what do you see the biggest complaint in terms of finances would be?
Usually one person is a spender and one is a saver.
I agree.
And so it's no shock there, right? And so it's like, okay, wait, where do we meet in the middle here? And I think it's really simple. I think we need to open up that conversation and have a talk about, hey, what are our goals here? And talk about the short-term goals and the long-term. Because there's going to be some sort of overlap, right? But I think it's so important that both people are on the same page of, yeah, I was thinking of putting a down payment on a house at some point. Okay, cool. How long are you thinking? And we really get into the structure around that. And I think people are so scared to talk about money because of how they grew up. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that we just need to talk about head on in order for the relationship to grow and feel more connected.
Yeah. 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 I feel like one of the partners are more or less, if one of the partners can be more or less a little bit more forgiving, I guess, right. That sort of helps with that financial piece as well. It's sort of like, yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah. She's a saver, or, you know, yeah, he likes his toys. I mean, it's just sort of like, yeah, it's just sort of, I guess the give and take, of it all. But how about, let's say when one of the partners is overspending due to an addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a chapter in Love Hacks specifically about addiction. So I think, you know, we'll even start there, right? Mm-hmm. So the important thing to me about if a partner has addiction is that both people need to get help, right? I think we focus a lot on the partner who has the addiction, which is the first priority. However, the partner who's dealing with the partner who has the addiction needs help too. I mean, this is a very difficult thing to go through. And so both people separately need to get help. And so once that's established, once the addiction is under control, then we can talk about kind of the spending that takes place, and we set up boundaries and structure around that, right? And it might be, you know, until this is under control, like, hey, you know, we have to, I'll be in charge of the spending for a little bit until that trust is earned again, you know, something like that. Yeah.
What do you think is most beneficial for couples in terms of bank accounts, joint versus individual?
I mean, it's so funny because I really think it's dependent on the couple and what they feel comfortable with. I mean, I wish there was sort of a magic answer, but I mean, I've seen both. I've seen individual works really well for them, and they, you know, and I've seen joint where they feel like a team and a unit. I mean, I think, and it's also one of those things, I mean, maybe couples can try a joint account together and see how that works for them and say, okay, let's give it 6 months. Let's see how we do, how we feel. And if either one of us feels like it's not working, then maybe we can do separate accounts. So I think there's just flexibility within it.
Mm-hmm. And getting down to, you know, that root cause of, you know, why one is opposed to either one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What's behind that, right? Like, what's the fear behind, having a joint account or.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the book, Love Hacks, I talk about there's what I call like an emotional inventory with money, because so much of it has to do with how it was modeled for us. Mm-hmm. And so I ask these reflective questions of, you know, what was it like growing up for you and your family with money? You know, did your parents fight about it? You know, were people who had money, were they considered successful and, you know, amazing versus people who did, you know, and there's so much there that it's even unconscious, right? That we don't even realize. Mm-hmm. So I think that's helpful for partners to do a little bit of that inventory check.
Right. Like, so much, I think, is unconscious. I think only and that's the thing, right? That's the tough thing about relationships is we don't know, we don't know what we don't know. And until we start actually living with this person for a while, because like I said, in the beginning, you might talk about, you know, this is what I need out of the relationship. Like, I would, strongly encourage that, right? Like, it's sort of like have that discussion. These are my expectations, and this is what I need. But then I know in my experience, you know, too, like you, life does happen and people change. Right. So do you think that, like, what's your workaround for that? Like, how do you help couples through one of the partners sort of letting them down in terms of expectations and sort of joint agreements that they had at one time?
Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing you talk about is like that resentment, right? That builds. And it's so common. And that's what's also causes to me a lot of the lack of intimacy, because nothing kills libido like a resentment or anger. So yeah, I mean, I think that's something that needs to be talked about. And those conversations are so hard. But saying to our partner, you know, hey, I feel really disappointed, you know, that this happened. Or, you know, I'm really hurt still about X, Y, and Z. Can we talk about it? Using those I statements, right, that are really important rather than the you blaming. It's more about, you know, what are you feeling? I'm feeling hurt. I'm feeling disappointed. I'm feeling let down, you know, any of those things, and communicating that to our partner. Because it sounds like, you know, we're just holding on to it and we're not letting it out. And then it's going to come out sideways. It is. And so it's important to have those difficult conversations. And that's going to be the start of it.
Do you feel resentment is more common in women or in men?
I think women. Yeah. From what I've seen. Yeah. I'm curious.
I agree. And why do you think that? Why would it be women more?
It's a good question. Gosh. That's a really interesting question. I mean, I can see it both ways. Maybe women can be like less forgiving than men. I'm trying to think. Maybe it's that. I mean, yeah, because I'm just thinking about the couples in my practice, or maybe they're just too afraid to say what they're really feeling, and so that resentment just builds. What do you think? Yeah,
I think it's probably like you say. I think there's a lot of variables and a lot of reasons, and like things that are coming up in my head too would be. Well, I mean, sort of being the caregiver, it's very natural for them to just sort of take care of everything. When the tough get going, the going get tough sort of thing. And also, I think it's that, like, it's so, like, because I don't want to paint, like, sort of this large stroke over women either, saying that, they're a certain way or this. But I think really what it comes down to it is the person being uncomfortable talking about their feelings and feeling that, this too shall pass, you know, like, I mean, perhaps almost being a little bit more emotional, like, I don't want intelligent, but in touch with their emotions a little bit more. Sure. They don't want to hurt their partner. They don't want
being polite.
Yeah, so being being the good little girl, like just sort of just, you know,
taught to just kind of, you know, accept and
makes
sense.
Yeah, because I think the burnout part is a very real thing for women as well, and I mean, you know, the same for men. I don't like to stereotype any gender here, but like, they just, I don't know, sort of want to take it for the team all the time, and very hopeful. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Until one day, I think the cup overfloweth, right? Yes. And then the roar comes, right?
Sure.
Like that's what I find, like the gates open, and it's in the common phrase I always hear is I'm done. I am.
Right. Exactly. So done.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. For the record. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it on both sides, right? Men can hold resentments too. And it's just, I think it's just a little, just from my own experience, I've just seen it a little bit more with women. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is your workaround for resentment? Like, what is it? Is it just keeping the communication, like teaching them right from the beginning to be very, very open with their emotions?
Yeah. So I think that's the first step. And then I think it's processing through that anger, and that can come through a variety of methods, which I detail in Love Hacks. And so, for example, you know, writing an anger letter, not giving it to your partner, mm-hmm. but getting it out, right? Or doing like a forgiveness meditation, if you're open to that. I mean, there are just so many things that I think you just have to do the work to release a lot of that. And it's not fun, kind of what we were saying about therapy, and it's hard. But it's got to be done in order for you to have a better relationship. You know, to me, for things to change, things have to change.
Yeah. How would you, because I've heard men ask this question, like, mm-hmm. you know, they've said like the work, what is mm-hmm. the work? I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
You do the work.
Right. So, right.
Well, how would you describe
What does the work mean?
Yeah.
The work means getting really honest with ourselves, which isn't fun or comfortable, mm-hmm. and it's hard. And so it's, and getting to the truth, which may not necessarily be pretty, about yourself, about your partner, about your needs and wants. So to me, that's the work. And then feeling uncomfortable, sitting in that discomfort and not running away, not, you know, using any of those addictions that we talked about, gambling, shopping, no, really just sitting with it. Doing the work to help the relationship. That's how I view it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how about for somebody that, you know, let's say there's someone that you're working with or mm-hmm. one of the individuals in the relationship, and they feel very burdened with, you know, let's say maybe not even criticism, but complaints by their partner. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. like I try and it's just never good enough.
Right.
Like, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. she's always pointing, and see, like I say, naturally guys, because I think women tend to be a little bit like everything has to be perfect about them. And it's just never good enough. And they get very, very down about mm-hmm. that as well. What would you suggest that they do, like as a man?
Right. As the person who's getting criticized?
Like, I hate saying criticized, maybe a lot of complaints,
Sure. Well, I think the first thing would be, I would want to set up a no complaint criticizing fast for couples, right? Let's just try that. You know, I say to my couples for a few weeks, see how that feels for both of you. And if it's so hard for you, you know, take a little journal and write what they're doing that's bothering you, and we can talk about it in session, but let's just see. And it's amazing. They come back the following week, they're like, yeah, things were really smooth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I'm like, did anything come up? They're like, no, I forgot. I can't remember. And I'm like, yeah, because mm-hmm. in the moment it feels so intense, but then it's like, oh, that wasn't important. They forgot to take out the trash. Like, it's okay.
Right.
We've moved on. So I think that's the first step. But then as the person, if you're constantly receiving that, I think it's having a conversation with your partner and saying, hey, I want to build our connection even more. Let's just try to talk about maybe what we appreciate each other here. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's very easy for us to focus on what's not working, but maybe we make a pact to talk about what is working for us and what you appreciate for that I do, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's the start to help. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Words of appreciation, or just focusing on all the good instead mm-hmm. of than what's not so good. I think one thing that couples do run into, like trouble, like, I mean, you know, I've given that instruction too, but I think it's those unconscious behaviors that come up, right? Like, yes. As you're speaking right now, I might, like, I can imagine, like, the like you said something like the a lot of the disputes come from the smallest little things. So let's imagine a couple in the kitchen, and mm-hmm. you know, one of the partners is cooking a meal. The other partner comes in and, like, unconsciously kind of sort of criticizes the partner by saying something like, oh, you used that sauce?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Or,
exactly.
Or they start rearranging the dishwasher.
That's a big one. Yes.
It's a huge one. So it's sort of like, and that's so mm-hmm. triggering for the other partner, right?
Absolutely.
It's just like, I mean, steam is coming out of the ears at that point. Yeah. So what could we suggest?
What can we do?
Yeah.
So I think as the partner that feels criticized or complained, I think we just pause and say, you know, when I hear those kind of things, it really hurts me because it's getting vulnerable with that, right? It's getting to that place, you know, hearing that makes me feel sad because I've worked really hard on this meal. Mm-hmm. And I think what was pointed out to me was that I didn't do it right. And so maybe going forward, again, we can kind of focus on what works, right? Like, and maybe we can just say, hey, for future, you know, could we use X sauce instead of this one, right? So there's just a way of saying things, you know, that can help everybody be more receptive.
Yeah, no, good point. Like you remind me, that's like the importance of communication. And even though I think that term is used like too much, I mean, mm-hmm. like that's know, couples come into my office too and say, you know, we can't communicate, but they have to get a lot more granular than that, you know, with me, like in order to help, because it's just, it's such a common complaint. But I think what you just described there is, is really like trying to almost creating the script before they go into the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Completely. Yeah.
And I feel, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, and if people get nervous about like when they're talking to the partners, which can happen, I say you can write little notes. That's okay. And bring it to your partner. Like, okay, I want to talk about X. Because sometimes we can get so flooded, we forget. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and how would you define flooded?
When we get overwhelmed, we can get, you know, the ideas suddenly pop out of our head. We can get angry and then suddenly say things we don't want to say. So it's utilizing that little note sheet to remind us like, okay, no, I want to talk about this, this, and this, and I want to stay on track and not get into the emotional brain. I want to get more into logic about what we need to talk about and work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What should one do if they do, like once it happens, yes. right? Once you're flooded.
It's very tough.
So what do you suggest to couples when that happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing I talk about in Love Hacks is this concept of timeouts. And people think of timeouts as like punitive and, you know, putting a toddler in the corner, but it's really just a way to get recentered. And everybody gets flooded or overwhelmed or angry. And so super important to notice when you do feel that way. So to answer your question, I would say to people, write like as you start to notice that you're getting overwhelmed, right? Don't wait till after, notice, right? So some of the signs could be you're clenching your hands, you're clenching your jaw, you're getting red and hot, your heart's beating fast, any of those physical symptoms. And stopping before it gets to that place and saying to your partner, hey, I'm getting overwhelmed here, or I'm getting flooded, however you want to phrase it. You know, do you mind if we just take a time out here? I don't want to regret anything I want to say. And I think we can better communicate afterward, or just say, you know, hey, I'm just going to call a time out. Mm-hmm. And then after a few hours, you reconvene and the conversation is so much better. And during that time out period, you know, you do something that's going to help recenter you, whatever that is for you, taking a walk, listening to music, whatever it is to get back to that place where you're calm and can have that conversation again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You remind me of a strategy that's used by the Gottmans, right? It's sort of, just letting them know that just that communication, like I can't do this right now. Right. And telling them when you can do it, because I think that's the other thing that
the
partners, like I know typically they think that, oh yeah, you're just leaving again, but so you have to tell them.
Exactly. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I said the same thing in the book. This is not a time to just exit the conversation, never talk about it again. Mm-hmm. And the person who calls the timeout is the one who then has to reconvene and say, okay, mm-hmm. I'm ready now. Or you establish a set period and you both come back together. But that is absolutely right. This is not an excuse. And then also for the partner who may feel rejected with the timeout, I just want to speak to that, because that can happen. It can feel like, you know, no, I don't want to talk to you. It's more, if you can look at it as, we're both going to get our points across better if we take this timeout. This is not a pride thing or a winning thing. It's, hey, we're both going to be more receptive if we're calmer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I never have seen disputes being resolved when two people are screaming at one another. Have you?
No, you're right. Exactly.
No.
It doesn't work so well.
No, exactly.
Makes for good drama and TV shows, but yeah, not a fruitful conversation.
Right. Exactly. How about, have you had, like, back to the ADHD thing, you had adults in your room that have mentioned that they've been diagnosed and it's contributing to the relationship?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some don't know that they have it and their partner thinks they have it. So that I've seen, but it is difficult. But again, I think it's one of those things that once we are educated around it and the partner's educated, it can make a world of difference. Because I've had couples come in and they feel that the partner's doing this on purpose, right? They're always late. Mm-hmm. They just can't get organized and it's so frustrating. And I've told them, and we have a real conversation about what ADHD is and how that executive part of the brain just doesn't work the same way. And I think once partners can see that, like, oh, okay, so this is not their fault, right? They're not trying. In fact, they want to be more organized, and that compassion can help more understanding of that partner who has to deal with it.
Yeah. What if the partner says something like, you know, but I don't see them doing anything different. Like they constantly tell me, you know, sorry, you know, this is me. I'm so forgetful. Yeah.
Right.
What do you suggest then?
I think that they come up with a collaborative approach. Right. I understand that. And I accept that, you know, this is how you are. But I think, you know, as a team, we can work even better. So maybe we sit down, we figure out like what can help you more, right? So, you know, maybe it's having a timer on your phone, you know, when you're in the shower so that, you know, you don't lose track of time, you know, simple things like that, that can make a world of difference. And it's, you know, saying, look, we're in this together, we're a team. And so if we can collaborate together, we can figure out the solutions that work best for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned something, about, you know, couples, I mean, it seems to be more complicated than it was 10 or 20 yes. years ago. Do you think so?
Like, yes, what? I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Tell and I'll tell you that. Why.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's so many more distractions today than there were 10, 20 years ago. And I just don't feel that we are spending the same quality time with our partners than we were, because we have more things going on. We have a phone going off. We have emails coming in. So I'm a big proponent that we put structure around the phone and computer, and we really focus on our partners. And whether that's at dinner time, or we say it's a no phone rule, or we just plan a date night and agree, okay, yeah, neither one of us is going to look at our phones. But I think it's so important because we need that undivided attention to feel seen and heard. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done studies to show that even on dates, if people have their phone on the table, people don't feel as paid attention to, because I think it's that anticipation of, is it going to go off? Is it going to ring? Is that date going to look at their phone? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and it's, I think you're right. Like, it's become so accepted in
yes.
society too. Like for, you know, that like for someone like after 6 p.m. to answer their emails or their phone or
respond
to an employee or something like that. And so I guess it's checking, like each partner checking their boundaries about, their partner's commitment to the relationship rather than their work or whatever that might be.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, I 100% agree with you. I think it's the chronic stress as well. And that's, you know, the small little stresses that are titrated, you know, through the system throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the months and the years that people don't really notice. You know, that upon themselves. And then how can you be a good partner when you yourself are so stressed? And I really don't think people realize how stressed they are until the stress goes away.
You're right. You are spot on. Yeah. And it's like, if we don't feel our best, how can we give our best to our partner?
Right. If we don't do the self-soothing, if we don't make sure we recalibrate back to that state of, you know, normalcy or homeostasis at the end of every day, doing things that we enjoy, which doesn't mean like watching Netflix or whatever, just like, I don't know. Yeah. Bath, walk, meditation. I just don't think people are replenishing themselves enough, right? Like they feel guilty that they're taking time out for those things when everybody else needs them so much.
Oh, we all need them. And I think, especially in America, I think it's just like, you are praised if you are working harder. You know, mm-hmm. I know some clients who are like, they don't even want to take a nap because there's this idea that they're being lazy. And I think, you know, I'm all about that restoration, which we need. I mean, in the Netherlands, there's something called Niksen, where it's really just kind of doing nothing. And it's totally accepted, you know, I mean, of course, not all the time, but, you know, it's this idea of like, yeah, we need, and that's where a lot of our creative thoughts come from, right? Mm-hmm. When we're daydreaming and we're kind of zoning out, or that's why people say my best thoughts come in the shower. Mm-hmm. And I think now, again, bringing it back to technology, we're in lines at the bank or wherever we are, and we're just scrolling. We're not having some of that natural creativity come to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. What's your sort of go-to for self-care?
Mm. So I'm a big meditator. Mm. I've been doing that since 2007, imperfectly, twice a day, but that's helped a lot. But I love fitness. I have a Peloton that I love. I love hiking, and I love animals. I have a little whippet that I just love, and it's so soothing and calm for me. And then my friends, right? So I have a lot of social interaction, and I try to really balance it. And every week isn't perfect, but I really try. You need those joyful things in our life. Otherwise, you know, what are we living for?
I know. No, right? That sounds great. How did you get into meditation? Because a lot of people find it difficult.
Yes. So you know, it's funny. So I had a friend back in 2006 who said, you know, I think this might help you. And I thought, yeah. And I literally blew it up, right? I'm like, that's great for other people. And then about 6 months later, he said to me again, and I'm so glad he did. And I thought, you know, if I hear something twice, that's a message.
Right.
So he told me about this group, and it's very similar to transcendental meditation, but it's called Vedic meditation, little like kind of offshoot. And I had somebody teach it to me. And you get your own mantra. And it was just, you know, it's like one of those things where it just quiets down the voices a little bit, like the craziness just quiet down a little bit. And so you don't feel as reactive is kind of the best way. And
so
that's been a gift, a real gift.
Were you, sorry, it's pronounced or said how? Or
Vedic meditation.
Oh, M with an M?
M-E-D? V as in Victor, Vedic meditation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
V-E-D-I-C. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've heard of it. Do you teach your sons?
You know what? So I always said, I was like, this is my plan. Yeah. When they're ready, I have approached it. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's like anything else, right? They've got to want to do it themselves.
Exactly. I mean, even though we know how important it would be for their brains.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be even that much more challenging. I really think it, you know, the craving for it, the urge has to come from within. And
of course.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like anything pretty much. Right. It's like, because if somebody wants to do something, they're motivated, right? They're not motivating to please somebody else. They're motivated within themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to ask you one more question here. What do you think is like, what's your number one go-to or recommendation to rekindle the connection that's been
lost?
Yeah.
All right. Sure. I think the first thing is getting really vulnerable with our partners. And that means really bringing it to the table and saying, you know, hey, I feel like maybe we've lost something here. And, you know, what can we do to bring that back? I think sometimes people just avoid that, which makes sense. It's uncomfortable. But I think if we bring it to the table, that's where that we can start from there, and we can grow, and we've acknowledged it, and both parties are aware of what's going on. But I think that vulnerability is so important in a relationship because it brings out that authenticity. It brings the connection, right? We're not avoiding. And so that's my first thought is to start there. And then I'm really about that newness, bringing back some of those things that were exciting at the beginning of the relationship. And they've done studies to show adrenaline-filled activities can bring couples together. So do some rock climbing, roller coasters, just something different even to bring back some of that excitement, the passion, the joy that maybe has been lost for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember reminding each other sort of why they got together in the first place. Like, yeah. Yeah, all those fun activities that, mm-hmm. yeah, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Connecting to their values again, long-term vision.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, because that vulnerability piece is a real, real tough one.
It's very tough.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Like, tell us, yeah. Like, is your book out?
Yes. So Love Hacks is out and you can find it online, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. And yeah, and I think I just want to end and say, you know, relationships are hard, but I think we're so quick to just want to exit when things are tough. And so the reason I wrote Love Hacks was this reminder of there are solutions that can help us. Mm-hmm. And so I want to kind of keep that faith going that, you know, couples can work their issues out. And it also doesn't have to be so complicated. They can be simple solutions that can really help. You've got to do your part. Both partners have to do their part. But yeah, I think we can help couples this way.
Yeah. And I always get very excited. Like, you know, when I see that both parties are actually invested and interested, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I kind of remind them the fact that you're showing up here, you know, in front yes. of me, it is a really good sign in itself.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, there is that rare occasion where one person's dragged in, I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, it's, mm-hmm. I always say it's great to get a little help from, you know, a professional,
yes.
a friend. Yeah. All right. Well, I know, like I always link everything, right. you know, with my guests in the show notes. So you can find Kelly, mm-hmm. On all the social media platforms, her website, very easy to find. Her name is spelled with an I, K-E-L-L-I, Miller. Mm-hmm. You can't really mess that up.
Exactly.
So I'm sure you'll see her book right away when you search that. So thanks so much, Kelly. I really appreciate you coming on and helping our couples out there who are struggling a little bit. It sounds like a great piece of work that you did. Thanks so much for doing that, for writing that. Like I say, I know it's not easy.
Right. So, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay. Very welcome. And everyone else, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Thanks once again for joining me on another great episode of I Think I Can podcast. If you liked it, please subscribe below so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And until next week, treat each day like it was your last, because each new day is a privilege that we shan't take for granted. Cheers and have a great week. Bye-bye.